You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And welcome in to the Locked On Nets podcast. You are listening to Locked On Nets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, I'd say 3 days a week, sometimes two, sometimes four. We would like to say every day a week, but realistically, that's never going to happen. So 2 to 4 days a week. I'm Gavin Shaw. I'm your host, all-around Brooklyn Nets expert, and I'm joined by the Joshua Bass, the lifelong fan. Went to a great jam band concert yesterday. Humphries McGee, if I'm correct, right, Josh?
You got it, Gavin. Not Chris Humphries McGee. This is not Chris Humphries JaVale McGee. This is Humphries McGee.
Right, and you went on a double date, and I heard it was spectacular.
Yeah, it was a good show. Unfortunately, I got to. I missed a great Nets win. I caught up after the fact, but right. I had an update on my phone saying the Nets were down by 10 at halftime, checked midway through the third quarter, saw they were down by 16, and then didn't see until after that we had won. So that was good news.
Yeah, we were going to start talking about the Spurs game, but let's just get right into that Heat game, because I think that's what people want to hear. The Spurs game, competitive effort, tough loss. The Heat, we got the return of D'Angelo Russell, and he didn't play exceptionally well, 0-for-5 from the field, 0-for-3 from range, 2 assists, 1 point in 14 minutes. What did you make of his return?
Yeah, I mean, he looked pretty rusty, but that's to be expected after a long layoff. And I think you can see even just having another ball handler out there really took a lot of the pressure off of Dinwiddie and LeVert. And those guys were fresher for crunch time, especially LeVert, who turned in an excellent performance the final few minutes. So D'Lo's going to get back to speed. It might take him another game, might take him another 3 or 4 games, but he'll be up to the level where he was pre-injury, and I'm excited to see how he does, because I think he can really take his game to another level and add a lot to the offense.
Yeah, and we kind of saw the immediate impact of it that you and I both expected. Nick Stauskas kind of falling out of the rotation, and D'Lo, at least for this one, taking those minutes. But I kind of agree with you. Like, I like his on-the-court impact in terms of having another ball handler, but just having another just flat-out competent guard in the rotation, I think, was really important to them down the stretch, because they got to put in a lineup that's honestly just, like, in terms of, like, guys I love, like, my favorite lineup they've had on the floor all season, and I think the reason we haven't really seen it all that often is because they just, like, couldn't put these guys together at the same time, because if not, the next lineup to come in would inevitably be kind of bereft of scoring and star power. But they had Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, Joe Harris, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Jared Allen. Those are, like, that's literally, like, my five favorite guys on the team playing
together.
That's
awesome. So
that was pretty fun. Yeah, and then they had that possession that was kind of the fulcrum of the game. I think at this point they had subbed Harris out and put Allen Crabbe back in. But it was 87-87. And Caris, who we're going to get into this a little bit, I thought was just insanely clutch down the stretch and played near perfect basketball. He is able to draw a switch just because of how patient he is on the dribble, which I think is something that's gone a little bit underrated in his game. He draws the switch. He has, like, this ridiculous, like, Dwayne Wade style Euro step where they kind of do the Euro and, like carry the basketball over the guy's head. Draws a triple team. Does, like, a 180 in midair to find Rondae Hollis-Jefferson in the corner, who throws the extra pass to Spencer Dinwiddie, who throws it to Allen Crabbe. Allen Crabbe whips it inside to Jared Allen, who spins around Bam Adebayo and finishes on the other end. And that was one of, like, my three or four favorite possessions this team has had all year. And then, like, two plays later, you get Dinwiddie blowing by a guy for a dunk, and then you get Caris. Oh, well, first Caris hit a three, then Dinwiddie blew by a guy for a dunk, and then Caris is just, like, insane finish over Hassan Whiteside. Like, on the replay, like, I didn't even know how he made it. Like, I think we've both seen this season, like, how good he is, like, when he's able to put his body into someone that almost, like, centers him and helps him make the layup. But Whiteside's arms were so long, he had to put the shot up at such an unconventional angle, and, like, somehow he was just able to put it in. And, like, it's crazy, but, like, you're starting to see, like, a little bit of, like, poor man's, but also much taller, like, Kyrie Irving in his game with his ability to get to the rim and then finish creatively around the bucket.
Yeah, he definitely has a nice layup package. I think, obviously, the thing he needs to work on a little bit more is his floater and mid-range game, which has gotten better this year, but still a work in progress. But yeah, that finish over Whiteside was insane, because we've seen Caris, he has a lot of creative layups, but he doesn't always make them. He had one earlier in the Heat game where he just blew a wide-open layup, and that happened from time to time, and as he gets more consistent, that will change. But just that the difficulty of that finish and that hanging that extra half second in the air, so he was able to release the ball after Whiteside's arms, or as you would like to call him, Hassan Whitehead.
Yeah.
His arms came down a little. That really made the difference. And once the Nets took that 6-point lead with, I think, like 40, 50 seconds left, the Heat were just not going to come back mathematically. It just wasn't going to happen.
No. I shut the game off at that point, partially because I already knew they won, but I felt pretty good. They were down, you mentioned it off the top, down 10 at halftime, down by as much as 64-48 in the third quarter. From that point forward, outscored the Heat 53-32 and ended the third quarter on that 14-0 run. And we kind of touched on D'Angelo Russell's impact. But I thought, even though, again, he clearly wasn't shooting well, and there were like a couple times he forced shots in ways that really did annoy me earlier in the year, I think Sarah Kustak kind of got to the bottom of it. Like, if I'm Kenny Atkinson, I'm just driving it into his head. Just keep making the right basketball play, the simple play, time and time again. And the thing is, like, even at 21, he's smart enough and he has the vision to do that every single time. It's almost like whether he can kind of, like, restrict his, I don't want to say his confidence in his offensive game, but, like, his desire to shoot and take tough shots and make tough shots. Because when he was just making, like, the extra pass and the hockey pass, and then he had that one where he found Rondé underneath the basket, that was, like, a beautiful look that I don't think anyone on the team other than Spencer Dinwiddie could have made that same pass. That's when he's really, really good. And if he can kind of shift his game just 10, 15% in the direction of being a little bit more unselfish, I really think he makes this team a lot better.
Yeah, no, he definitely does. And I think that even though he went 0 for 5 from the field, I thought all of his looks were good looks. And I know we've gotten on his case a little bit about forcing some shots, but I thought everything he took was really in the flow of the offense. Just the shots didn't go down, and that's going to change. But, yeah, it was nice to see that he wasn't really forcing anything. And at the end of the game, obviously, he could have been upset just not being in the game, but he was up there being very supportive of his teammates, calling out sets and everything, and really being engaged, which is something that I noticed the whole time when he was injured, but really just giving his support to Spencer Dinwiddie and LeVert in particular, as seeing as they're really taking a step up in his absence.
Right, and it was a joy to watch D'Angelo Russell return. And tomorrow, the joy of my day is going to be watching the conference championship games in the NFL. And if you're like Josh, you probably want to get in on the action on those games. Get a little bit extra investment if you're not a fan of one of those four teams. And the way you can do that is with MyBookie. The NFL playoffs are finally here, and I wanted to tell you guys about the site mybookie.ag, the number one rated online sportsbook. With your fantasy football season likely over, the only way to use your sports knowledge to win cash is by betting at MyBookie, the sportsbook that makes it easy to deposit and even easier to cash out your winnings fast. And here's where it really appeals to you. They have odds on everything, live betting, and an all-new prop builder. So you can create your own bet slips. Bet exactly how you want. You think LeBron James is going to get 30 points, 10 assists in a game? Why not bet on it at mybookie.ag and put your money where your mouth is? Bet from your desktop, tablet, or on their world-class mobile site that lets you bet anytime, anywhere. MyBookie offers the fastest, no-hassle payouts when you win. Now, here's why you want to join right now. If you do it immediately, MyBookie will match your deposit with up to a 50% bonus. All you have to do is use promo code LONBA when you make your account. That's LONBA. Visit mybookie.ag today and bet on the internet's favorite sportsbook where you play, you win, and then, this is my favorite part, you get paid. All right, so the Nets 101-95 win over the Miami Heat. And Josh, I feel like we've touched on a bunch of guys, but we've ignored the player of the game. Damari Carroll, arguably his best performance in a Nets uniform. And this is just, like, so far and away the best he's looked in the last couple of months. And who knows, maybe he got a little bump from D'Angelo Russell being back. But 9 of 12 from the floor, 3 of 5 from range, 26 points, 6 rebounds on just 12 shots. That's an efficient outing.
Yeah, he was excellent. I mean, I think a few weeks ago I was starting to get frustrated with Carroll a little bit. Defenses have kind of caught on to his just trying to, like, BS, draw the foul, just lean into someone and throw his arms up, and hopefully his arms are going to meet theirs. But he was just so good, just knocking down clutch threes. I thought his drives to the basket were excellent. He was getting a step on a bigger guy, particularly Whiteside, who was really getting drawn out by the Nets' perimeter players and getting torched. But Carroll had some nice layups, good finishes, and really just keeping the team afloat in the first half. And then obviously his big run in the second half. And then when other guys stepped up, like LeVert, like a Spencer Dinwiddie, they were able to have enough of a manageable deficit to come back from, because Carroll put in all that work.
He just looked like healthier to me than he has recently. Like, yeah. Every game, like, it seems like there's some like part of his body like bothering him, and that was kind of the story his whole time in Toronto. He was never really.
I feel like the Nets guys had like so many nagging injuries. Just every game, there's at least two or three guys that just get banged up.
Well, in this one, it was ridiculous because like guys kept like slipping on drives, like particularly for the Nets in the first half when they were going. I guess I mean the direction's meaningless because it's all relative to where you're watching, but east to west on your TV. And they like kept like driving, and like Dinwiddie twice like slipped on like the tarp at like the end of the court. Like I think it was like the Nets like CEO had to keep helping him up. Like that was kind of insane, and like I guess it brings up like some of the same issues we had with like the Paul George injury at the Olympics, and like how close like those seats are to the court itself.
Yeah, can you believe that this tied Damari Carroll's career high?
Yeah, I do. I do kind of believe it. I mean,
I was surprised.
No, I know. I mean, like, he just.
I know he tied it. I wasn't surprised because I knew that in the Houston game a few weeks ago, that's when he either set it or tied a previous career high 26. Right. But I don't know. I feel like he could have had a 30-point outburst at some point.
Yeah, I guess. No, that's fair. I don't
think
know.
In the playoffs against the Nets, he might have had 30 once, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he was with Atlanta.
No, definitely possible. It seems like that happened a lot to the Nets in the past. But the fact that he did it on only 12 shots makes it all the more astounding. And I'm hoping this is like going to be like setting the precedent for him the rest of the season. Like, no, I don't think he's going to average 26 points a night. But if he can continue to be like effective and efficient, which has again gone out the window a little bit over the last few months, like that combined with D'Lo, like really does elevate this team. I think you said at the top, this like wasn't a game the Nets should have won. And like I kind of looked at it as like another example of the Nets living by the sword, dying by the sword, where they like time and time again, they have to just come back from these dramatic deficits in these games. And it seems to happen just like more and more often, particularly down the stretches. These guys maybe wear down a little bit, but they're so good at making those comebacks. And more often than not recently, they haven't been able to pull them off. But this time they kind of cruised into a finish.
Yeah, an update on the Damari Carroll's playoffs against the Nets. He scored at least 20 straight points in 4 consecutive games.
Jesus, I don't even remember that.
But none of them was above 24. So, yeah, I was wrong, but he definitely dominated the Nets in that series. No, just going back to what you said, the Nets do have a lot of depth, I think. I mean, the problem is there's not a whole lot of difference between their best player and their ninth or tenth best player, but yeah. I would put those ninth or tenth men up against any ninth or tenth men across the league. You just need more top-end talent. I think especially with Russell back, it's going to take some of the load off guys' plates and maybe start playing, I guess, more of a perimeter-based lineup with Damari Carroll maybe playing a little bit more four. And I don't know how I feel about Quincy Acey still being in the rotation. Obviously, Atkinson loves him.
Yeah.
he's so inconsistent.
Well, I mean, I guess the whole premise of it is like the system they're playing like relies on like 4-out or even like best case scenario for Atkinson, 5-out basketball. And AC is still like the only big that can consistently, I'm not even going to say consistently make threes, but consistently shoot threes. So he's just like in that archetype of a guy that they need out there in that lineup. And even if he's not like clearly like the worst player out of like the bigs the Nets have been playing, but they still need him out there just because he kind of tangentially fills that role, I guess, is how I would justify it. I don't know. That's a fair point.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like, could they get Ilyasova on the cheap? Because I feel like he would fit in great.
Yeah. I mean, like,
he's actually like a knockdown 3-point shooter.
Well, it was like, I think it was a podcast I did by myself, but that's like what I was saying. Like if you look at like a position that, like, if you could pick one spot on the Nets to elevate the most, like, obviously, like, if you pick a player, like, you want to add LeBron James to any team. But if you want, like, a role to elevate, like, think about, like, switching out, like, Quincy Acey for Kristaps Porzingis. And I know, I think we ended up having this conversation briefly, but just, like, you take, like this, like, below-average stretch four and replace him with, like, arguably the best one in the league. Like, there are other guys you could throw in there and make a case for, but I'm just using him. Like, having that type of rim protection at that spot and, like, being able to play someone who's, like, credibly a center who could also just drain from three-point range, like, I think that would do more for the Nets than adding just about any other type of piece. So it's going to be interesting to see. Like, I don't know if that guy is really in the draft. In retrospect, someone like Lauri Markkanen would have been incredible for the Nets if they had a higher pick. But it's interesting to think about and, like, wondering who that guy could be down the road. Because that really feels like the missing piece to me, at least for this team being in the playoffs consistently.
Yeah, or Kuzma. Not to go back down that rabbit hole, but
yeah, that's fair.
He would have been a nice fit, but I think we're all pretty happy with Jared Allen.
I just want to throw out there that like the possession I talked about earlier, like the way he finished that was just awesome because like Crabb was like a half, like it was like a really good pass, but he was like a millisecond late on. Adebayo was able to rebound and like, I mean, he was able to like recover and like get on him. And like earlier in the season, like Crabb would have just like held the ball for a few seconds, waited for the double team, and then passed it out, and like that whole beautiful possession and like drive by Karras would have been wasted. But this time he was so decisive about spinning around, kind of using the backboard to shield the defender and like putting it in behind his back, like a shot that like he wouldn't have really hit earlier in the year. So I thought that was like a little bit of a microcosm of his progress and was
that
a, cool
was a
play.
Tough play. Yeah. Also, Adebayo's really good.
Yeah, he was so this whole game, and he was like so
he's
like,
really active.
He's like really physical too. Like, he was going like right into like Allen's body and like. Like hitting shots, like I could tell Allen was getting kind of frustrated. Because sometimes it seemed like he was fouling him a little bit, but yeah, I can't remember who, but like some credible NBA guy was like tweeting about like whether or not the Heat would be better with Adebayo instead of Whiteside, and I thought that was a step too far, probably. Hassan 22-13 and 4 blocks in this game, but he's like a good fit with their starting lineup.
Yeah, Whiteside was dominant, honestly. Like, the first half, he was just destroying the Nets, getting whatever he wanted. And he's very quick, and he's physical, and he can settle too much for some of his floater game. But when he really is going to the basket, he can be a really special player. I'm surprised that they didn't go to him more down the stretch,
yeah,
honestly.
He had
I feel like it was too much James Johnson ball hitting.
I agree with you. He had 5 offensive rebounds in the not in the first half of the game, but like I think the majority of them came in the first half, and that was pretty impressive. The thing I noticed the most on the Heat side, and I know we both have some Josh Richardson love that you want to talk about, but Derek Jones Jr., who got cut from the Suns, like the same team that wants their entire lineup to be below the drinking age. So I thought he was out of the league and like just
covering, I think he was till like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and like covering Phoenix last year, like I loved him just because of like if you know him from the dunk contest last year. He was just like amazing. Like he was just like fun to watch because he would just dunk and shoot threes. He almost I don't know if you caught it, Josh, but he like almost had like the greatest like
he
comeback
almost
dunk
ended
ever.
Allen Crabb. That's on my notes that I want to talk about. That would have been insane.
It reminded me of like, do you remember when Victor Oladipo was in college and he had that alley-oop he just missed against actually Caris LeVert in Michigan, where like the guard like threw like a terrible pass and he went up like cocked it behind his head and like it just like jammed it off the back off the back of the rim. But it would have theoretically been like the greatest in-game dunk of all time, or like one of the top, or like right up there with like Vince Carter ending Frederick Weiss's Weiss, I guess, because he's not
Weiss,
German.
I think. Yeah, that's Weiss, like honestly German. That's one of the best highlights. That was like a miss, like that's still a great highlight to show.
I love like the compilations of those, like because there have been like some great ones throughout history that were like inches away from being like the Gordon Hayward like half court shot against Duke is like a great example of that. Like I love someone to compile like a top 10 missed shots ever list. It's probably out there, but I put.
They did a sports science on Gordon Hayward's shot and like how close it was.
Yeah, I remember that
going in, right?
It was like they said like if he had like I forgot, like it was like the number of like rotations like permitted, and it was like 55 a minute, and if it had been like 53 instead of 55, it would have banked right in. It was something like that. It was just insane. And I hate that Brian Zubek is partially responsible. The owner of the former owner of a cupcake shop in New Jersey is responsible.
That Duke team was terrible.
They weren't that good.
It was,
no.
It was the two older Plumleys, right? Mason was, or Miles was still.
Well,
on that team.
And their three best players were John Shire, Nolan Smith and Kyle Singler. And ironically, they got Kyrie the next year and like returned most of that team. And they weren't. I mean, partially because Kyrie only played 12 games.
And Lance Thomas was on the team also.
Yeah. But they just like weren't as good the next year. Yeah, that's crazy. Like they had like three like quote unquote stars on that team, and Lance Thomas ended up being the best NBA guy of the bunch.
No, Mason Plumlee's the better.
Oh yeah. I forgot. Are you sure he was on that team?
Yeah, I think he was a freshman.
Okay, sure. All right, we'll give it to Mason Plumlee. But either way, he's top two. Which is like neither of those. So the two best guys like weren't amongst the three best players on that team. Which is always funny how that works out. Anyways, that was a long tangent.
Yeah, I'm not sure how we got there.
No, but, now that no one's listening, let me just I'll throw this out there.
Go ahead.
Since just something I've written down. Joe Harris, another really really good game, and I know I make note of every time he plays well, and don't mention it when he doesn't because I'm a Joe Harris propaganda artist. But 4 or 5 from the field, 2 of 3 from 3-point range. So and they mentioned like a stat on the broadcast about his 3-point shooting in January, which caution, small sample size, only 10 games. So, but I went and looked because I wanted to see how he compared to Spencer Dinwiddie and Allen Crabbe, who haven't been as good this month. And Harris in the month of January, 53% from the field, which is stunning, like how efficient he's been this year over like a much larger role than he's played throughout his career. 49% from three. Allen Crabbe actually a little bit better than I thought. 38% from the field, 38% from three. Again, it helps that he's had like two good games.
That's better. 38% from the field is better than you thought?
No, it's 38% from three is like a lot better than I thought.
On Crabbe?
Yeah.
He's 36%
from three. No, just for the month. Just for the month of January.
Oh, for the month. Okay.
Yeah. And then Spencer Dinwiddie, just terrible this month shooting the basketball. 37% from the field, 25 from three, including up until the third quarter of this game, he'd missed his last 16 three-point attempts, which is kind of wild.
Yeah, going back to this three-point shooting, and I guess we can kind of tie in this to the Spurs game.
Yeah.
The Nets, they caught fire at the end, but for the most part, they were just missing badly on threes. And Allen Crabbe actually had a good shooting game against the Spurs, 4 of 6 from 3. I thought Joe Harris was excellent in that game, really carrying the Nets. Probably the only player besides Crabbe that played well in that one. Those two guys combined for 38 points, 8 of 15 from 3. And that's how the Nets need to win. But the rest of the team, just 5 of 21 on threes. Guys like AC Dinwiddie really struggling. And the big difference in that game was Patty Mills going 7 of 8 on threes, just unstoppable. And Aldridge is a beast down low. Like, he is honestly unstoppable to guard when he has his fadeaway going, because he can also just power moves to the basket if he's a smaller guy on him. He's really tough.
Well, no, as I guess we didn't mention it, I wasn't able to watch that game due to a DVR issue and my aversion to watching Nets basketball live. But Josh, you saw the entirety of that, and that's interesting to hear your take on Aldridge's performance, because, I mean, again, you just like look at the box score and he was like clearly dominant. But what did you think about like the rest of the Spurs? Because I know this is like not really central to the Nets, but like I'm always like stunned how they can just like drop guys and still be like they just win games. Like, they beat the teams they're supposed to. Like, Kawhi Leonard, no Kawhi Leonard, it like almost doesn't matter to them.
Yeah, I mean, they were pretty. I don't think they were great in that game. Honestly, it was just Aldridge and Mills. Everyone else played pretty poorly. Pau Gasol did some damage in the first half.
Seven assists. That's crazy.
Yeah, but guys like Bryn Forbes, Bertans, who else do I have? DeJounte Murray. Like, I thought they were going to make more of an impact, because obviously we always know the Spurs role guys are, they just churn these guys out and find them from everywhere. So kind of like the Nets have been doing with a guy like a Joe Harris or a Spencer Dinwiddie. But yeah, it was mainly the Aldridge and Mills show. I mean, they combined for 59 points. Very efficient. And the Spurs just kind of did enough to get the job done. Every time the Nets would cut it to three or four, one of those guys would have a big basket, and then all of a sudden Nets deficit would be down to around seven, and then they just couldn't make the comeback at the end.
I guess it's like that classic.
It was a tough game.
Yeah, it's like that classic like NCAA tournament moniker, like regardless of like how you shoot on a specific night, you can bring your defense night in and night out, and that's probably like a large part of the reason they're so consistent. Is like, just going through the box score, like Allen Crabbe and Joe Harris were like the only Nets that shot the basketball well in this game, and like everyone else was like pretty like terrible from the field. But taking that back to the Heat game, I want to kind of finish this podcast up talking about how strong the Nets were defensively in the second half of that game, only giving up 42 points. But before we get into that, I wanted to remind you to follow us on social media at Locked On Nets. Josh does a great job running that account, clapping back at haters, tweeting his thoughts out on games. And we just want to keep getting more interaction on social media, because I think that's like the best way to do a podcast, like particularly when you're kind of like in the weeds and you're watching every game and you're doing a couple a week. You want to hear back, and you want to like get like a sense of, well, we want to get a sense of what you guys think, like where we can improve, and also like where you think like we're wrong on our Nets takes, because obviously like I love having Josh to bounce off of, but we tend to agree on a lot of stuff, and like I know people have like distinctly different perspectives, like the guy who got very mad about our Allen Crabbe criticism. So tell us, like make a compelling argument, make an uncompelling argument, just tweet at us, call us stupid, like we're here for all of it. So that's at Locked On Nets. I'm at Gavin Shaw. Josh is at JM_Bass. I always forget it.
I think JM_Bass.
You can find him.
I'm not too sure.
You can find him. You'll find him. Anyways,
I have a very handsome profile picture.
Oh yeah, that'll give it away. All right, follow us on social media. All right, the defensive effort for the Nets. Yeah, I was just like the Heat hit like some tough shots down the stretch. Like there were like a few, like I know like James Johnson like had like one on DeMarre Carroll, or like Sarah Kustak kept talking about how strong defensively he was on the play, and like I totally agreed with it. Like he played flawless defense, and he had a tough one. Goran Dragic had like a spinning floater in the lane that was just ridiculous. But the Nets like consistently, and like it was really like it wasn't even like help. He's like the Heat weren't swinging that much. They were just like holding up in man-to-man, because the Heat's whole thing is, like, to, like, generate mismatches and then take advantage of them. And the Nets just, like, kept winning those battles again and again and again, which was really impressive. And, like, obviously they're going to play better offensive teams, but it does continue, like, about, like, a 15-20 game stretch now. The Nets playing much better defense than they did in the first half of the year.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I think that they were just better contests, and I don't know, I think they maybe started to figure out the rotations a little bit. I feel like the Nets' offense has been horrible lately, but their defense has really been pretty solid. I think they're definitely in the top 10 in defensive efficiency since December, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Just playing harder. I mean, honestly, that might change if guys like Okafor and D'Lo start getting more minutes, and possibly a trade of DeMarre Carroll at the deadline, which I'm sure we will get into within the next week or so about trade deadline chatter. But I think that the effort's been there, and that's what you want to see. And obviously the personnel isn't great, but defense is all about effort, and if you can are doing that, you're not going to be bottom of the barrel, regardless of how unathletic your players are.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, Josh, because I want to encourage people to check out Locked On Hornets, and like they did like a really good like instant tank on Kemba potentially getting traded. And, like, I think the Nets like are pretty set on point guard, so I don't know how relevant that is to us.
Yeah, but, I thought of a possible trade, and it wasn't going to work out.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I don't think they're really the team for him, unless, like, maybe they give up someone like D'Angelo Russell for him to get him back.
Yeah,
to New York.
But no, even that, they're both going to be a free agent at the same after the 2018-19 season, and D'Lo makes about half as much as Kemba does right now, and obviously I don't think it's a good look for the Nets to, even though Kemba's a better player right now, I don't think it's a good look for the Nets to be exiling someone that they just made, they just consider one of the faces of their franchise and are starting to build around. I think that they need some sort of continuity. And it's not like trading stocks. You really want to help grow the organization up. With all this talk about culture and grit, I think that let's try to keep the core together and build this for a little bit, and obviously add on to it and be strategic if there are opportunities. But don't just trade players for the sake of having a very small short-term upgrade.
Josh works on the trade machine, so I don't see an issue with it. No, but I agree with you.
Does it work on the trade machine?
I don't know. I didn't actually look.
Yeah, no, I don't think the Nets are
probably have to throw in another contract. Yeah. But anyway, maybe they want Mozgov. I don't Mozgov. that's
is there a big Russian presence in Charlotte?
Yeah, I've heard that. If not, the Charlotte's GM Rich Cho likes like to eat like every cuisine of food, so I'm sure he could take Mozgov to a Russian.
Yeah, he had like Kasha Varnishka.
Something. Oh, of course. What was I going to say? Yeah, anyways, and also, like, I feel like if the Nets, like, even, like, opened a trade talk mentioning D'Lo was available, like, a team would hang up the phone immediately, because, like, yeah, like, his reputation already took, like, kind of a big hit, in, like, the Lakers, like, kind of bashing him on the way out. Like, if the Nets, like, wanted to deal him immediately.
Here's the thing, though. I think that with the Lakers, they're still dysfunctional, so I feel like that's actually repaired his image.
Oh, yeah, no, I know. I was just saying, like, if another team wanted to trade him immediately, that would reflect pretty poorly. Anyways, that's like about everything I had. I like the way D'Lo and Jahlil Okafor played together. Like, obviously, those two have some chemistry, being in the same draft class and, like, seemingly having, like, there's a bit of a relationship there. So, interested to see, like, if Okafor kind of exclusively plays with D'Lo going forward, or they still give him some minutes with Dinwiddie. And, like, and we didn't really see any D'Lo and Dinwiddie lineups this game. Or, I can't remember, but I don't think D'Lo really played with Karras all that much either. And that was kind of, like, my big concern / interest with him coming back. So that's something that fascinates me going forward, like how they're going to juggle that guard rotation and like what minutes he's going to spend on the floor with those two guys.
Yeah, no, there was definitely, I remember there being some overlap with Karras. I can't remember. I think there must've been a little bit with Dinwiddie, but not sure about that. And I think it'll be interesting to see how that goes. I feel like D'Lo and Dinwiddie will work well together, so I'm excited for that partnership.
Yeah, that being said, I think, like, as much as you could possibly, like, separate them, like, particularly, like, D'Lo and Karras, because it was a super small sample size. He only played 12 games, but we saw just how different of a player Caris LeVert was when he wasn't with D'Angelo Russell. And again, unfair to
put
that.
But on we don't know if that's because he wasn't with D'Lo or because he was just in a slump at the start of the season.
Sure,
I don't
sure,
misattribute anything.
But no, but I think there's like, I don't know. I think like, at least in my opinion, like you could definitely put part of that on D'Lo. And like, again, it's not like a malicious thing, but it's just like how he plays and like how he dominates the basketball. And what we've seen from Caris, where he's like, I mean, obviously you have like, now with the way he's shooting the ball, you have a little bit more of a spot up element with him. So that makes it a little bit of a cleaner fit. But like he's been at his best when he can dribble, when he can face a guy down, when he can kind of draw a defense in and kick it out to someone. And he's not that guy off the ball yet. So I really do think like as much as possible, I'd separate those guys. And then maybe if that's effective, you start experimenting with more lineups with the two of them. But it's kind of like it's like a obviously like a much more like poorer man's version of what the Rockets have. Like have a good point guard play for 48 minutes of the game if you can manage it. And if all three of those guys are healthy, there's no excuse to not have like one of them on the floor at all times.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think one or even two of those guys on the floor at all times. And probably, I mean, not for most of the game, but probably not for all of the game. But I think also just going back to what you mentioned, I do agree with your point. If D'Lo's dominating the ball, then Caris isn't going to be as effective as an off-ball scorer. But I think the reverse really could be true. I think that D'Lo could thrive being more of a spot-up shooter, playing around Caris. Because that was really the plan this year, was to have D'Lo play a lot off-ball and spot-up around Jeremy Lin and really utilize his spot-up three-point shooting. So I think that's something that we could really see more of as he returns to the court.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, I know you're still going strong, Josh, but I'm kind of running out of steam on this one, and we put in a good 30 minutes, so I think we could wrap it up right there. Unless
yeah, guys, just know that I wanted to keep going.
yeah. As always, I'm the bad guy. Anyways, that is it for this edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. As always, we really appreciate you tuning in. The Nets have a game tomorrow, an afternoon game against the Detroit Pistons, and me and Josh haven't talked about our schedules yet, so I don't want to promise anything. But I think we'll probably.
Well, Gavin, I thought you said you were going to go live for the Zion Williamson college decision.
I did promise that, and I will. I'll do it. Follow me on Periscope at BigBaller69, and I will talk
to you. My little underscore ball.
Yeah, 100%. This is off topic, but have you seen the Twitter beef between LaMelo Ball and Kyle Kuzma that started?
No, what happened?
Okay, Kyle Kuzma was, he posted, like, a picture of him like walking into the arena, and he was like, his outfit was like, I don't know, maybe like slightly effeminate. Like I'm not a particularly stylish person, so I wouldn't judge it.
You're not
in any way. No, that's I just say, I mean, hey, Mr. Scarf in the club. I don't know if you are either, but even though some people like your style, I think you take more risks than I do, and I do.
Yeah,
I do.
I'm
do.
Very out there.
I do respect it. Yeah, I compare you to Dennis Rodman, honestly. But, so Kyle Kuzma, like, an outfit that, like, I didn't find particularly appealing, but I was like, all right, like, at least he's, like, trying. And, like, and LaMelo Ball commented, like, LOL, he thinks he's fly, like, on his Instagram. And Kyle Kuzma, it was like, I'm fly enough to fly through that gap between your teeth. Which was
I don't think there's anything there. I feel like...
Well, but here's the thing.
Because aren't him and Lonzo pretty good friends? Like, him, those two and Ingram are all boys.
That's possible. But then, like, LaMelo Ball, like, also tweeted out today, like, a photo of, like, Kyle Kuzma when he was like 14, and like it was like Kyle Kuzma like in dress outfit, like probably like for like his school, like making like a stank face in like the bathroom, and then like LaMelo Ball was like, we know what you did in there, you don't have to show us that you smell it too or something. So I don't know,
I think it's good natured.
It's good natured. Okay, that makes me feel better.
I don't think Kyle Kuzma should be fighting with a 16-year-old.
Yeah. No, I hate to see a future NBA star and a mediocre Lithuanian basketball player really get into it.
Wait, can we talk about this for very quickly? Guess how many followers Kyle Kuzma has on Instagram?
I'm gonna guess 8 million.
Oh, it's only 1 million. I thought the 1 million was extremely high.
I don't know, because I'm figuring there's there's like 20 million Lakers fans, and maybe like,
yeah, I guess all the Big Baller fans also, the Big Baller super fans.
And there's so many international fans too, and like everyone's on Instagram, and like if you have like a rookie that you love, you're like, oh, I want to support him, I want to follow him.
Yeah,
on all social media.
Donovan Mitchell and see how many followers he has.
Yeah, I bet it's, well, I don't know, Salt Lake's not that big, but he's so good.
300,000.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, I'm glad we got that in at the end. That'll wrap up this edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. Hopefully we will have another one in your feed Monday morning. For Josh, I'm Gavin. Peace out.